Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone in Internet land. I'm Jason O'Fear, and welcome to another episode of Paranormal Horizons. And I'm here always with the beautiful and talented Sherry Pang. Sherry, how are you?
Pretty good. How are you, Jason?
Not too bad. I'm glad that the weather cooled down at least a little bit. It's still a little too hot for me outside. How have you been holding up with the hot weather up here in the Northwest?
Oh, pretty good. I've been at the beach. You know me. I've been reading as a psychic medium. I've been working in the mornings doing some readings, and then the afternoon I'll take off and go to the beach. So I don't know if you saw that. I was on I was in Pacific City one day. I went to Cannon Beach one day, and then I went to Pacific City the other day. So, and today I just got off the radio. I was a guest speaker for Paranormal Night Stalker Radio. So that will be that's already taking care of the broadcast, and so I really appreciate them asking me to be on their show. So, yes, there's a very dynamic paranormal team, and really happy to be a guest. So,
well, you got us an outstanding guest this evening, and I see he's in queue. Yeah, tell everybody who you got us got for us tonight.
Okay, so we're going to have for the very first time, and the gentleman is named Clyde Lewis. He is the founder and host. He hosts his own radio show, and Clyde can correct me if this is not correct, but he has his own show every night except the weekends. We're very, very blessed to have him on air tonight. He talks of everything about from the paranormal to conspiracy theory, metaphysical, you name it, he can talk about it. Very nice guy. Met him at the Ghost Conference this year, and really like his knowledge and his spirit, and we're very lucky to have him, very blessed to have him. So why don't you bring him on if he's in queue?
Yeah, let's do it.
Hey, hi. How's it going? Yes, hi.
Hey,
hi,
good, how are you?
Hey, you're a guest for a change. Isn't that different?
Yeah, it's pretty cool, actually. I'm glad I'm on.
That's great.
Well, I know I'm thrilled to get you on the show. I definitely enjoy listening to Ground Zero and all the wonderful subjects you guys talk about. And so it's a thrill for me to talk to you for the first time and get you on our podcast here. And so I'm totally excited. And from what I understand, we're going to just kind of wing it and wing it for the next hour and talk about whatever. And I know I have some questions
okay.
for you. Sherry kind of gave you a little bit of a brief intro, and maybe if I don't know if you wanted to expand on a little bit about yourself, and I've definitely got some questions
well,
for you.
Well, she's right about that. We do a show. It's 5 days a week. We do a best of locally here in Portland, but it's 5 days a week, and it's Monday through Friday, and it used to be just on the weekends, and it used to be on rock stations. So we're now on AM stations and FM stations across the country. We've been doing it now nationally for about almost 6 years, and it's been on the air in one way, shape, or form for about 22 years. So we've been around for a long time. In fact, we were one of the first paranormal shows to be actually streamed online, so that was pretty cool.
That is amazing. One of the questions that wants
Hello?
To break into radio.
What's okay. wants to break in? Hello?
Yeah, sorry.
Are you there, Jason?
Yeah, sorry, I hit something. For somebody that wants to break into radio, how do you go about doing that?
Well, a lot of the time it's luck. A lot of the time it's, you know, for me, it was because I had the desire to go out with some girl I saw on the street. I was working construction at the time, and I saw this beautiful woman walk into an office, and I followed her in the office. It was near a police station. And I said to her, I said, hey, I'd love to go out with you. What does a man have to do to go out with you? And she says, you have to be a DJ. And I said, oh, a DJ, what do you mean? The police station? She said, no, this is a radio station. You have to be a DJ on a radio station. And I told her, I said, well, I used to do radio off and on with a guy, you know, an old producer guy. And I worked at a place called KCGL in northern Utah. And she said, well, that's not enough. You got to turn in a tape. You got to get a resume. And I says, okay, so give me some paper and I'll fill out a resume. And she goes, you got to go home and type on it. And I said, no. I said, I grabbed a crayon out of a basket and I filled out my resume in crayon. a week later, I get a call from the program director, and he says, "Yeah, he says I've never seen anything like this. You got to be crazy." And I said, "Yeah, I'm a little crazy." And so he gave me the gig. He just thought it was the most creative thing he ever saw. The guy wanted to get into radio so bad that he did his resume in crayon. So that was pretty funny.
So you got to be a little bit different then. Do things a little bit different. Maybe.
Well, yeah, I've always been the guy that's been different. You know, I've always been the guy that has done something that, you know, is kind of bizarre or out there, and try to be something that, you know, not very many people expect, you know. And so, you know, there are a lot of things that, that I do that I think are unexpected and kind of bizarre. And that's why I am who I am. I'm kind of like the weird uncle that you can't get rid of. Anyway,
we're all in that boat, Clyde, to be honest with you. That's why we're on the show.
Yeah, we're all a little weird.
Well, yeah. So, you know, we're the weird aunts and uncles that get the joke and no one else gets it. So that's how it works.
That's true.
Well, I know I've got a lot of weird personal UFO stories that I haven't talked about a whole lot on the show, but anytime I try and tell people those weird stories, you know, they definitely think I'm weird.
Mm. Well, you know, I always tell people, you know, the thing with the word UFO, it's kind of a trick word. You know, sometimes people say, "Do you believe in UFOs?" And I always say, "Well, what do you mean by do I believe in UFOs? If you're asking me if I believe that unidentified flying objects are out in the sky right now, and if I look up and I see a plane and it just so happens to be at a different angle and it kind of looks unidentified, then yes, I believe in unidentified flying objects." I tell them, what you want to ask is, do you believe in unidentified flying objects being piloted by spacemen or aliens? And then I'd say, well, not all of them are. And the ones that are beyond explanation, I still need to have somebody prove to me they're not something from out of this world, or at least something advanced that we've created. And so, yes, there are unidentified flying objects. And I guess it all depends on, you know, whether or not you want to trick people into saying they believe in aliens. And even then, I believe in aliens too, so it doesn't matter.
I know when I look up at the sky, I can't identify anything. So to me, they're all UFOs.
Right. And that's true. I mean, if you can't identify anything, they're all UFOs. They're unknowns. You don't know what they are. And until that thing, you know, gets close enough to, you know, sound like a 737 or something, then, you know, it's something unknown.
Have you, have there been any significant, with the guests that you've talked to on your show, have there been significant sightings up here in the Northwest recently?
Well, you need to remember this, you know, while everybody focuses their attention on Roswell, you know, anytime UFOs get brought up, I always say, Roswell, Area 51, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like going, no, 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 no. You need to also include Maury Island. You need to include Mount Rainier and Kenneth Arnold, and you need to include Mount Adams. And if you go back and if you look at UFO history, the UFOs that were sighted long before Roswell, the UFOs that were sighted were over the Northwest. The Maury Island case was the first case in the modern UFO era that people wondered about. And it was also the first case, you know, that brought on the Men in Black and two witnesses that said that they saw UFOs and Men in Black who told them to back off. And then Kenneth Arnold was flying in an aircraft over Mount Rainier. And he flew over Mount Rainier and he saw these nine aircraft. He said they looked like, you know, flying wedges. And he says they were like saucers skipping over the water. And that's when immediately they said, oh, a flying saucer, eh? You know, and they put it in the newspaper. And then came Roswell. And Roswell, of course, was a flying disc, was captured by the Army Air Force. And that's how it all began. But there was a lot of stuff happening in the Northwest long before, like 3 or 4 weeks before Roswell. So, yes, the Northwest is the best place to actually stake a claim on UFO folklore or UFO stories is to start here in the Northwest.
I heard that there's a place just across the border, you know, across from the Columbia, that there's some ranch that some guy has out there, and like literally at 10 o'clock at night, you could see these UFOs flying around in the skies, and I wish I could remember the name of the place.
Oh, actually, yes, it's called East Seti Ranch, and it's near Trout Lake, so it's in southeastern Washington, and it's in the line of the volcanic mountains. There's Rainier, there's Mount St. Helens, and there's Mount Adams, and of course Mount Hood. But Mount Adams is on the Washington side, and it's a beautiful beautiful area, Echinacea Field. People camp there. They have all kinds of gathering places. But at night, without fail, you look up in the sky and you see a lot of strange glowing orbs. They call them beam shifts, where they see these glowing orbs. And just recently, Jimmy Church got, who's a colleague, Jimmy Church was there, and he actually had video done, or video acknowledgement or proof of the of this door that opens up to let these UFOs out of the mountain. And we had seen it open in the dark because we'd see the light coming from the mountain, but to see it in the daytime, you know, that's an amazing thing. And they got it on tape. So the next time, you know, they go out there, they're going to want to hike up to that area where that hole is.
That's Mount Rainier.
It's Mount Adams.
Mount Adams.
Mount Adams. Yeah, it's south of Rainier.
How about you, Sherry? Have you ever seen anything weird in the sky?
No, I haven't. And it's interesting because I do believe in UFOs, but I've never personally experienced it. So I'm pretty open. And I know that there's people that have had, they were abductees, and, you know, their stories are very credible. So, you know, I do believe that they do exist. It's just, I think, I wonder if they pick them out. What's your feeling on that, Clyde, when people are abducted? Do you think that they're chosen, or it's just random, or what?
I don't know, probably a little both. I mean, I know a lot of people have said in studies before that most of the people that are abducted by aliens have Rh-negative blood. Could be a family thing where they abduct certain family members. These are things that have been part of the document for a long time, for the record for a long time. So, I mean, that's how, what I have to go on. And yet, you know, I'm still trying to ascertain whether or not what people are experiencing is something that would be akin to the spiritual or more physical, you know, more material. But if you read material by Jacques Vallée, he says that sometimes an abduction experience is hard to distinguish between a spiritual experience. So they both seem to be in the same realm of thought.
I know I've had some weird things happen to me, and I'll tell you a quick story. I haven't talked about this one, well, ever on the show, but me and my roommate were, and I want, because I'm going to mention it because I want your input, what you think it could be. It was kind of an interesting experience that happened. It was probably 20 years ago. My roommate and I were driving up from California, and somewhere around Ashland, it was the middle of the night, we needed to get some gas. And as we pulled off the freeway, there was an exit with a sign saying a Chevron station, like a quarter mile away from the freeway, whatever. So when we pulled off the freeway, the gas station was right there, which was weird because it didn't match what the sign said. So we pulled into the gas station. The attendant was super nice in a really strange, eerie, unusual way. And we were getting there. We were getting gas. And while I was standing there, there was a red car parked at the gas station with two people staring at me. And I remember thinking how uncomfortable it was. So we get our gas. We start to pull out. And we're like, oh, we need to change the oil in the car. But we hadn't actually left the gas station yet. And so when we went to do that, the guy's attitude totally changed. And we didn't think anything weird at the time. So then we finally left. And when we got back on the freeway, it was like we were there for maybe 10 minutes. 50 minutes had passed. And when we started to talk about the gas station and the guy being really strange, my roommate did not have a memory of a red car. She had noted in her mind that she thought it was weird that he didn't have a car because she was wondering how she got to work. So we had two different memories. Well, the strange thing is we were so weirded out about the whole thing, we called that exit to find out, you know, about that gas station, and the gas station doesn't exist. And we had driven by there years later, and there's no gas station there. So maybe we were just fatigued, but I hear a lot of weird stuff happens in Southern Oregon.
Well, I have a similar story to that one, and it's bizarre because I need to preface the story. It's really uncomfortable that it has to be what happened, but just hear me out, and you'll hear what happened. It's kind of a weird story. I used to work, before I was in radio, I used to work for Salt Lake County Public Works. I was a contractor and construction worker and did a lot of grunt work for the electricity department. And we were putting in, like, you know, street signs and stop signs and school crossing signs and all that stuff. And that's what we did. Well, they were opening up a new area up above near Deer Valley, Utah. And that was apparently a county site, not a city site, but a county site. So we had to go up there. We had to do some work. Well, there was this guy that was with me. He looked over at me and he said, hey, he says, I need to take you somewhere. I think you'd really like it. And I go, what's that? And he says, I want to take you to this restaurant. I go, what's the restaurant called? He says, it's called the Coon Chicken Inn. Okay. And I said to him, I said, now that's a little racist. Why would you call something the Coon Chicken Inn? He says, I don't know. But he says, it's got great chicken. I thought the guy was, you know, BSing me, right? I thought, come on, you know, he calls it something. The guy's a real racist jerk. You know, he's saying this. And so sure enough, we pull into this area and there it was. It was a Coon Chicken Inn. And it was the weirdest damn thing because I felt so uncomfortable when I got there because if you look at the doorway of this restaurant, the doorway had, you know, one of those old bellboy, you know, remember in the old cartoons where they used to have the white face the black face, you know, character with the big white lips considered, you know, the black face racist thing. Well, that was on the front door. That was the big door. You walk through this face and you walk in and the whole place smelled with paint. It smelled like it was just painted. And these guys were behind the counter and they were selling chicken. Well, I ordered some chicken and I ate the chicken and it was really good chicken. And so, you know, for years, I just remember, well, I was going to school at the time. I went to my instructor who was this black guy. And I said to him, I said, hey, I said, you need to go with me to this place called the Coon Chicken Inn. And he says, Clyde, he says, why would I want to go to a place called the Coon Chicken Inn? And I said, because I would want to see their faces when a black guy walks in with me and see if they feel a little uncomfortable about this. Because I was like going, wow, they have great chicken, but, you know, whatever. So it'd been years, just years. And I just remembered the experience. And one night I was with one of my girlfriends and we were sitting down and she wanted to see this movie called Ghost World. And it had Steve Buscemi in it and these young girls this young girl falls in love with this older guy, Steve Buscemi. I mean, gosh, Lux out there. But anyway, so this younger girl falls for this older guy. And so they go through this guy's things and in his collections are old placemats from the Coon Chicken Inn. Okay. And I said to my girlfriend, I said, hey, I've been there. And she goes, you what? I said, I've been to the Coon Chicken Inn. And she says, really? She says, yeah, they have one in Salt Lake City. And I went, it was in Utah. And she says, oh, she says, well, why would there be an establishment like that? And I said, well, it was open like 5 or 6 years ago. Maybe they shut it down. Because, you know, I remember the whole Sambo's, you know, they shut that down because they thought it was racist and a bunch of other things. So I decided that I wanted to, you know, find out more about this. And so I called, actually, I looked it up on the internet. And I wrote Coon Chicken Inn, Salt Lake City. And sure enough, there was a Coon Chicken Inn, Salt Lake City. But it closed in 1958. And the reason why it closed was because of racial insensitivity. They picketed the place until it was shut down. They had one in Portland, Oregon. It's where Clyde's Prime Rib is now. And they had another one in Seattle, Washington. So so I called the guy on the phone, the guy who's the grandson of the people who own the Coon Chicken Inn. I said, hey, I just want to let you know that your website says that you had a Coon Chicken Inn in Utah that closed in 1958. But I was at a Coon Chicken Inn near Peoria, Utah, with a friend of mine, and we had chicken there. The guy says, no, you didn't. I go, we did. No, you didn't. He says, well, describe it for me. So I described it just the way, you know, I described it just the way I just described it to you. And then the guy said to me, he says, was there anything strange going on in there? I said, strange like what? He says, well, what color were the walls? I said, they were purple. He goes, okay. And he said, was there anything strange about the chicken? I said, no, it was very good chicken, as a matter of fact. He says, is there anything strange about the way they served it? And I says, well, they served it with pickles and they served it with ketchup. And he goes, my God, you've been to a Coon Chicken Inn. And I said, yes, I have, sir. And he says, they don't exist anymore. So somewhere you went into a place that didn't exist. So I went into a phantom restaurant named the Coon Chicken Inn. It's one of the most, you know, it's hard to tell that story because of what it means. But it was like so weird. And it's like a dream anymore that I went into that place. But it was there. I ate there. They served me chicken with pickles and ketchup. And, you know, and that's what the guy said. He said, that's how they used to serve the chicken, is with pickles and ketchup.
Wow. That's essentially the same thing that I experienced. That's pretty close. Now I'm really intrigued. What does it all mean? I mean, is that like fake implanted memories from an alien abduction? Now I'm really scratching my head.
No,
person.
It's a time differential. It's a time warp. There's another story about these women, and you can look this up. I can't remember the name of the area in Utah, but it was another Utah story about these women that were in Gadianton Canyon. It's this southern area of Utah. And they said they were driving around, and it was like in the 1970s. I thought it was the 1950s, but I looked up, it was in the 1970s. And so these girls are driving, and they want to pick up some guys. They want to go to a bar. And so they're driving, and they see this fog that they drive into. They drive into this fog. And after the fog lifts, they notice that the alfalfa fields have turned into cornfields, and the blacktop has turned into white cement. So it's not likely that you'll find corn growing in fields in southern Utah, because it's just the climate is not good enough for corn. So they're looking at the cornfields going, wow, that's weird. There's cornfields. And then they see this bar ahead, and the neon sign is in a language that they don't understand. It's not Spanish. It's not anything else, but it's some strange language. So the one woman's putting on her lipsticks. They go into the bar, and sitting there at the bar are all these werewolves. So they screamed. They ran back into their car, and these guys chased them out. They got on motorcycles, but the motorcycles were shaped like, and this is what they described, egg-shaped motorcycles with long spokes and three wheels. And we were being chased by these wolf men. They were in suits. They were chasing after us. And they said that they finally found a way to get out of there, but they went through the mist again. It was over.
Makes me feel like we're living in the Matrix. What do you think about that, Sherry? Have you ever been in a phantom restaurant or gas station?
No, I haven't. I can't comment on that because I haven't.
I had always assumed that it was like maybe some kind of abduction, but it's interesting that your experience is very similar to mine, because I'd never talked to anybody before that had experienced anything like that. And maybe it is some sort of time warp, like you're saying.
Well, you know that if you look up, now that we have quantum physics and all this stuff, you know, going on, and I just say that quantum physics sometimes is a nice way of explaining magical things. But truth be known is that, you know, we have something that used to be theorized called a Rosen bridge. And what that is it's a vortex of time differentials, and they come down every once in a while. And when they do, you can walk into the vortex and get swept away to another time, at least temporarily. And then it goes away again. And so this is something that Einstein said exists. And now they're saying that there are pockets of, they can take you directly to the sun, or they can take you directly to a planet, because they open up. They're kind of like a whirlwind or a doorway or even a wormhole that opens up, and that you could probably have a direct drive, if not a direct jump, right to that planet. And so you can look it up. They're called Rosen Bridge. It was a theory once by Einstein, but now they're proving that Rosen Bridges exist.
Well, that's kind of terrifying. You know, you're cruising on your way to work, and the next thing you know, you're on an alien world or something like that.
Well, it happened to my wife and I one time. We went to McMinnville for the UFO festival, and it was hot. We're coming back hot and tired. And I said to my wife, I says, can I stop off at Starbucks and get me a coffee? She goes, no, we're running late. You know, she snapped at me, and I said, wow. I said, okay, I guess you're tired, whatever. So she makes a right turn, a left turn, and all of a sudden we find ourselves in the middle of nowhere. We don't even know where we are. We're in this farmy area, you know, in this wooded area. We don't know where the hell we are. And so we drove it, you know, we drove all around. And finally, what was really odd is the road led us back to where we started again.
Oh, wow.
And so I said to Janine, I said, let's try this again. Honey, can we go to Starbucks for a coffee? And she says, yes, sweetheart, we have to change the timeline here. So, yeah, we went and got the coffee, and everything was great, and we got home. We didn't get lost. But we made a turn, and when we made that turn, for some reason, it put us right back where we started from, and we didn't even know it. It just we went into the woods, and we didn't make any U-turns. We just went straight, kept going straight, thinking that if we went straight, we'd get out of the mess. We ended up starting where we began, and it was just the weirdest thing.
I mean, that's kind of scary to me, you know, to experience these weird time slips or all these quantum things. I'm not familiar with quantum mechanics. I know that there was some studying done about how just our simple perception of something changes the way it behaves. But it's kind of terrifying to think that our world isn't just so nuts and bolts, that there's this hidden invisible thing going on that can sometimes glitch like a computer program. Or maybe we're actually living in a computer program. Oh, my God, what if our brain's in a vat?
Have you ever heard that story that, you know, what if we're all just brains in a bucket somewhere in Arizona and there's this man that they pay to just walk down the aisle, reach in and squeeze our brain and then go to the next one. And that's why we have consciousness, is because some lab guy is like squeezing our brain to make us realize that we're living in this artificial construction. You know, it's kind of funny.
That's crazy. So what do you think, Clyde, about the Fukushima, the radiation that's polluting our fish along the Pacific coast?
Well, I find it funny that, you know, for the longest time they've been dumping, you know, strontium and all kinds of other things into the water. And then one day they wake up and they say, oh, by the way, I want to dump out 300,000 gallons of tritium into the Pacific. And it's like everybody goes, what? You want to put tritium in the Pacific? How dare you? And I just laugh because it's like they have been dumping just tons of radioactive material into the Pacific Ocean. And what's terrifying about this is that I went to a restaurant once on the Pacific coast and I ordered some fish because I'm thinking, hey, here I am at seaside. I'm going to order fish. And it was just so expensive. And I said, how is the fish so damn expensive here on the coast when it should be cheaper? Oh, because we bring it in from the Atlantic. And I'm like going, whoa.
Oh, wow.
And I said, oh, I get it. I get what you're saying. Uh-huh. We don't want to talk about it. So, I mean, that tells me something there, that I'm sure there are plenty of people that don't see a problem with, you know, lobsters and crabs and blue tuna and all this stuff, you know, all loaded with radiation. They think that it's going to be not detrimental to human health. But I'm sure there are other people that are thinking, no, they're not going to risk the possibility that they're going to be serving radioactive fish to their clientele on the coast. So, I just found it interesting that I asked the question as to why my fish was so expensive, and they told me it was because they got it from the Atlantic and not from the Pacific. And here I am on the Pacific Ocean eating Atlantic fish.
There's your answer, right?
Right. Yeah. Right.
Is there any conspiracy going on with that you've heard? I mean, we heard about a lot about it for quite some time, and no one's really talking about it or that I've seen. I mean, is it really going to, like, cause a significant health problem?
Oh, it already has. It already has caused significant health problems. I mean, we have stories of stillborns happening, people who live on the coast. We have stories of seals with burns on their bodies. We don't know where the burns are coming from, where the welts are coming from. The seals are dying. We have, we have a whole bunch of things. There's a whole list of things I can tell you is going on in the Pacific right now. Bluefin tuna at the moment. Some people would even sell it in China because it's radioactive. I mean, there's no real conspiracy here. What we have is negligence. We have TEPCO, who is greedy. They don't want to do anything to, you know, lose money. General Electric, of course, they're in here too because they created the machines for the nuclear power plant. So, yeah, it's negligence on all sides. And, you know, people say, well, you know, it all dilutes out and that's not really a damage. But, you know, any radiation that is considered deadly radiation, no matter how small it is, has a long lifespan inside of you, and it burns you and eventually gives you cancer.
And it's even when you go to the doctor, Clyde, I mean, you go in and they say, oh, it's not going to kill you. It's not going to hurt you. Well, why is it that you put a lead shield on me and you're out the window, you know, you're out the room if it's not going to hurt you?
Right.
I mean,
exactly.
Tell you, it's amazing how they just lie to you. It's from eating the as consumers, we're eating food that is so processed. These companies, from Hershey's to all these other big conglomerate corporations, they're putting so much chemicals that they're actually almost killing us.
Yeah, they are. I mean, when you have Monsanto, who was once a chemical company, decided they're going to be a food company that's looking out for your felt, you know, you say to yourself, what? Are you kidding? I mean, this company is responsible for Agent Orange, which, by the way, they just teamed up with Bayer. So now Bayer owns Monsanto. Bayer, if you may remember, was the company that created the Cyclone B that gassed the Jews in World War II. So we have two notorious companies. Monsanto, a chemical company that basically harmed soldiers in Vietnam and their generations afterwards. And we have another company called Bayer that was responsible for Cyclone B that gassed the Jews in the concentration camps.
And then you get these military guys that have served, you know, risked their lives, and they get these diseases and things. And you look at the government, you know, the veterans, are they really helping our people that serve their, you know, that risk their lives? That's another thing.
No,
that's,
no, because they have a lot to think about, because most of the time, many people don't know this, but they do vulnerability studies on soldiers. And so something like Gulf War Syndrome was a vulnerability study. They brought it back, and, of course, it manifested in other ways, like Epstein-Barr, and it manifested as chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia and all these other things that doctors says were all psychosomatic. And there's other, you know, diseases that are around, too, like Morgellons and Pandora virus, Dulce, which both of those viruses, they don't know where they came from, and many say that they have the characteristics of an alien virus, that maybe something alien was the culprit for bringing these viruses into the spectrum.
Now, didn't the CDC pretty much blow off Morgellons as being like some parasitosis or something?
It was something that they diagnosed as being some sort of psychosis, and that's pretty damn I think it's pretty damn insensitive to people who are suffering from it, because even people like Joni Mitchell, the singer, she suffers from it. And there's a baseball player, I can't remember his name, but he suffers from it. And, you know, there are a lot of people who suffer from it that are right now, you know, they're suffering in quiet because they're afraid to tell anybody about it. And because the doctors will just laugh at them and say that they're crazy, even though they have these strange fibrous materials growing and crawling through their bodies, and they can't seem to get them out.
That is horrifying. I've seen some pictures of the fibers, and a lot of people blow it off as being, you know, just fibers from your clothes. But like you said, I mean, a lot of people are experiencing all sorts of like weird lesions and strange things.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh. And it's a lot of people have committed suicide because they just can't live with it anymore.
The suicide rate has increased. Have you noticed that? I've been reading, and they say that the suicide rates have increased in the last years.
The Schumann resonance is like out of whack too. I mean, the Schumann resonance is supposed to keep everything in pace, your heartbeat, everything that keeps humans human. And the reason why is because the magnetic field is now changing, and I think we're going to be seeing a pole shift soon. When we saw a pole shift on the sun, what, 3-4 years ago, and they say the pole shifts begin on other planets after the sun. So once the sun does it, all these other planets follow. I don't know what's happening on Venus or Mercury, but I can sure imagine what it's going to be like on planet Earth if there's a pole shift.
And that's a magnetic pole shift. So that would throw off north and south. I don't know anything about it, but what kind of detrimental effects would that have for us on Earth? Would GPS be out of whack?
Your compass would point south. Your GPS would be wrong. You'd also have some mental disorders happening, because the brain has in it something called magnetite. Animals would be finding themselves being hostile or flying or dying or whales beaching themselves. I mean, this means that we have something wrong with the magnetic field, and the magnetite, which these animals use for navigation, it gets screwed up, and so they wind up dying. They wind up flying in circles, getting frantic, flying into buildings and dying. And that's what we've been hearing about this a lot. And it means that something's wrong with the Earth's core. It means something's wrong with the Earth's core. It means that the magnetic field is going in and out, meaning we're having tsunamis of power, which would result in rolling blackouts, fires. People, you know, who have anxiety would break out in more anxiety. People who have pacemakers, their heart would start going crazy. I mean, these are the things that happen. The sun and the moon and the stars do affect us, contrary to what a lot of people in the technocracy will tell you.
So you think we're kind of building up to some sort of finale? Because we always hear about it, you know, when you look online, it seems like every year somebody has a prediction that it's the end of the earth or humanity. And the most recent one I heard was that Planet X is going to be coming by in September, and you know, it's hard to know what to believe anymore.
Actually, no, Planet X is going to be seen in December. They're saying it'll be seen, but it's not going to cause the problems that everybody thinks Nibiru is supposed to cause, because it's actually a planet with a very wide elliptical orbit. Now, whatever happens, happens, but we do have the risk every day of having an asteroid hit this planet. I mean, Chelyabinsk happened in 2013, and we had 11,000 people injured when that exploded over Russia. Now, the one that was more powerful than that was Tunguska, where it flattened out like 700 miles of trees because it was such a huge explosion. And luckily, there wasn't anybody under that explosion. They would have been polarized because of the explosion. So, yes, we have space anomalies every day that could come in and kill us all. We have earthquakes, volcanoes, everything at the drop of a hat can kill us all. But the thing that always happens, and it never fails when we have these extinction-level events, is there's always a group of people or civilization to witness it. And that's always been the rub, is that someone who is within a distance on the planet can witness it and knows what happens, and they tell the story of the apocalypse that once was. And that's why when you're reading the book of Genesis in the Bible, you're not really reading about a beginning. You're reading about the beginning that happened after an ending.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that. It feels like the Northwest is due for something. You know, they've been saying that we're overdue or soon to be due for one of these coastal megathrust earthquakes. And mm-hmm. I've always thought that something's going to pop up here in the Northwest soon, because it's been a long time. The last kind of quasi-disaster we had was that big flood in the 90s.
Right. I look at it as the reverse psychology. You know, if you keep saying the big one's going to happen, it won't. You know, keep saying the big one's going to happen, it won't happen because of reverse psychology.
Yeah, let's keep putting out the thoughts. Nothing's going to happen out here.
Yeah. And then it does happen. It's like break a leg. It happens.
Yeah, it's hard to know. You know, I've been in the paranormal since 2005, and with all the fakery out there with the videos, it seems like everybody's using Photoshop and, you know, making up mm-hmm. stories. It's become so hard to believe or to know what to believe, because there's so much fakery out there and, you know, all these predictions, and I'm left just scratching my head because I don't know what to believe. I don't know what to worry about, so I might as well either worry about nothing or worry about everything, and I tend to worry about everything, which is
Worry about the eclipse. I should say worry about the eclipse. Oh. Because it's going to be crazy for people.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, think about it. You've got 1.5 million people that are going to be getting together in Salem, Oregon, John Day, Oregon, Madras, Oregon. And they're all going to gather in these areas. Now, these are small towns with millions of people in these small towns. How do you think the logistics for this is going to be? People are going to be on the road. What?
Oh, I wasn't aware that it was going to be that big of a draw. I haven't really been following the story, but if...
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a huge draw. It's going to be a huge draw. All on the path of totality, there are going to be people wanting to park, ride, drive, you name it. So what we have is a countrywide traffic jam. We have a countrywide stopping of everything, because the whole continent of the United States, the whole North American continent, are going to see 60% of the eclipse. Totality, on the other hand, is where all the millions of people are going to gather. So I'm in the totality area. I'm here, you know, well, 60% here in Portland. No, it's 90% in Portland. But I'm going to be in full totality when I go down to Salem. I'll be staying at a Red Lion Hotel, and so I'll be there to see it in Salem, Oregon.
Well,
I think I'm going to stay
at Newport. They have, over 20,000 people, residents that live there. And they're
mm-hmm.
expecting around 200,000 for that weekend.
Yep. So you can imagine, you know, what the restaurants are going to be like. You can imagine what the food's going to be like, bathroom services. I mean, it's going to be like a whole group of people migrating to a small area that's not used to that many people. You can imagine there'll be a lot of problems with that.
Okay. I haven't been following it. So when is this happening? I don't even remember. It's soon, right? Is it this week or
the 21st of August? The 21st of August.
Wow. That's going to be interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm probably working that day. I think I won't make any attempt whatsoever to view it. Because
You'll still feel it, because it's going to go midnight at about 10:13 in the morning.
Well, I work nights, so I'll probably sleep right through it. But hopefully there isn't any insane pandemonium. But from what you're saying,
yeah,
it sounds like
your
pets. It's going to be crazy.
Your pets will sleep right through it, too, because they go right back to sleep when it gets dark again. It screws up their body clock.
What are you doing, Sherry? Are you going to go out and see this?
Not sure. Hey, we have the Bigfoot conference in Troutdale. So we got the
I'll be there too. I'll be there that weekend. I'm going to be there in Troutdale, the Bigfoot conference. I'll be speaking there emceeing a little bit of it. That's what they want me to do.
Yeah, that'd be great. Yeah, we're going to be there.
Yeah.
Or at least I'm going to be there. I'm going to be vending. So Jason is going to have you out, and we can go live too.
Right.
Yeah, that'd
be great.
Awesome. Now, I know we're kind of bouncing all over the map here, but one thing I wanted to ask you about was a little bit of conspiracy. I love conspiracy. You know, in the past, a lot of conspiracy theories have turned out to be true, but of course, the big one is 9/11. I've been watching some videos that have been analyzed showing that inconsistencies and suggesting that the videos that were released by the news were, you know, created in a studio. What are your thoughts on 9/11?
Yeah.
Do you think that it's
well,
legit the way that
whenever I get these clickbait theories, I always say, what's the motive of them? I mean, what would be the motive of faking it in a studio? It doesn't make any sense, okay? It doesn't make sense. I mean, you know, what better way to get the attention than to have it really happen? I mean, the idea of having it being made in a studio makes me laugh because it doesn't mean a damn thing. I think what's interesting about, you know, 9/11 is that you should look around you and see that even after the 9/11 thing happened, there have been buildings that have caught fire that none of them have crashed freeform in a pancake in New York or anywhere else. I mean, there was a Windsor fire in Spain. That building didn't collapse. It was just a fire the other day in Dubai. And the whole building caught fire, and it did not fall to the ground. And there is, you go back in history, the only time there was a fire in a skyscraper where the two skyscrapers fell to the ground was 9/11 in New York. All the other ones, even when the Empire State Building was hit by a plane, it didn't crash, it didn't fall to the ground, it didn't collapse. So why is it that this one was the only one that fell? It's because it's just crap. It's nonsense. I can't believe that you know, people still think that, oh, jet fuel made it happen. No, jet fuel is about the same heat as kerosene, which is what you use in your barbecue. So I don't see my barbecue melting because I'm lighting charcoal briquettes with kerosene. It's basically plane fuel. I don't get it.
Well, and then you have the World Trade Center 7 that seriously looked like you know, one of those controlled demolitions when that came down.
Mm-hmm.
But what those videos
obviously
don't show you is the other face of the World Trade Center 7 did suffer a lot of damage, but still, I'm kind of leaning more towards there's something else going on there.
Well, and people don't talk about this, but what happened to Building 6? Nobody talks about Building 6, but if you go back and you look up Building 6, Building 6 blew up right when they basically bombed the building before the planes hit. When the first plane hits the tower, and then the second plane hits the tower, you see smoke coming up from the street. That's not from the tower. That's coming from Building 6. They basically destroyed Building 6. It had all the records and all the money exchanges and stock exchanges with Middle Eastern countries that may have been behind the terrorist activity in 9/11.
Yeah, that's just a crazy thought to think that, you know, a government could be involved in something like that. But if you're looking at the past, there have been a lot of instances where our government and other governments have done some pretty shady things, but that definitely
mm-hmm.
takes the cake.
Yeah, well, you know, they tested nuclear weapons in the Nevada desert and gave everybody in St. George and Cedar City cancer. I've got something called tuberous sclerosis because my family was exposed to it. So, you know, if they can kill a bunch of people with their nuclear tests, why can't they kill 3,000 people without batting an eye? They could do it all the time.
Well, look at the chemtrails.
Yeah, exactly. Look at the chemtrails. Look how we go into Syria and we basically chastise Assad because he gasses his own people. And what do we do with chemtrails? We're gassing our own people and no one cares.
It's it's funny, I was watching some videos last night on the Middle East, and they were talking about war by proxies and how the U.S. and Russia and Saudi Arabia and Iran are doing all these war by proxies, you know, trying to meet their own needs. And the world is a crazy, crazy place. Why can't everybody just, I don't know, get along? And people are unbelievable.
Well, it's money, you know. Money is what keeps the coffers going, and war machines are what, you know, keeps everybody happy. I mean, it used to be that if we won a war, we felt good about ourselves. Now we don't feel good until we start a war. So that's the attitude of America. We know exactly what we stand against, but what are we ever standing for anymore? We're not standing for anything.
So I was reading an article about how our world may be possibly run by reptilians. What do you think, Clyde?
Well, that's the thing. Is it a metaphor? Is it reality? And is there a synarchy that's basically running the show from behind the scenes? There's always the possibility that, I don't know if they're reptilians in human form, but there's always a possibility that we're answering to a power that's deeper and darker than just the deep state, and that's called a synarchy. And so if it's a synarchy of reptilians, then so mote it be, but I don't know if it is. And I know that David Icke has been saying, but, you know, people say that it's code word for something else. I would say that there are reptilian bloodlines that we're fully aware of that are in some of the higher places in power. I mean, I think what we should be caring about is how Macron, who is the president of France, spoke in the Palace of Versailles, and he said, "I want to rule France like Jupiter," which means he wants to rule France like Zeus. And Zeus is supposed to be the god of gods. He just literally said, "I want to rule France like a god," which smacks, in my opinion, of some antichrist ego trip that he wants to go on. So, I mean, it makes you wonder about, you know, just who are the bloods of the Europeans and the Jews and you know, who are these bloodlines, the Jewish bloodlines, the Merovingian bloodlines, all these bloodlines. And so, you know, it makes you wonder about where their bloodline comes from, whether it be like some ghost species that had sex with our, you know, our ancestors, or some reptilian species that made us in a capsule somewhere. I mean, it's something to think about. Not always, you know, there's not always something to back it up, but there's always a lot of empirical evidence and stuff that's been recorded in tablets, you know, around the world that indicate that, yes, we've been visited, we've been having relationships. We've learned, we've taught, and we've had a lot of secrets of the universe revealed to us by beings from out there, whether it be reptilian or otherwise.
I've always assumed the planet's been run by some people living in some castle somewhere, a bunch of old men, you know, Illuminati style.
Who knows? You don't know. That's the whole point. Yeah. And what's really even weird, I had a guy that I talked with, that was an intelligence guy, and he said, "Wouldn't it bother you if the tentacles of the octopus were all in everything you do, but there is no head to this octopus? People are just doing it because they feel that they have to do it without any morality or thoughts of morality or any ideas. They just do it because it needs to be done." You know, the idea of it needs to be done, you know, the people can die because it has to be, not because they can prevent it. But, it, you know, these decisions are made like that, where they have to calculate who needs to die, who needs to live. You know, how many sick, how much can the earth handle? They do more than just, you know, give us laws. They also do other things like eugenics and DNA experiments and all that other stuff, because they want to be the masters of everything. They want to be the masters of the human brain, the masters of the human body, DNA, all of it. You know, it's kind of crazy, but true.
Because they don't care. They don't have to do the wet work. You know, they just make a decision and somebody else carries it out. You know, it's always easy when you don't see the humanity side of your decisions or the negativity or anything.
Right.
It's insane.
It's true.
People are crazy.
Well, you know, since I'm in Chinese medicine, that's my basis of my work. And, you know, I've been reading that a lot of these holistic doctors are being picked off. They're being picked off. I mean, literally all of a sudden they're dying suddenly of a suicide, or, you know, if they find some kind of, you know, they go public about vaccines and things like that,
right.
Then all of a sudden
right.
they're just out, you know, picked off or whatever. So it's interesting how, you know, Big Brother has seemed to have control.
Yeah, well, it's full spectrum control. I mean, they want to chip everything including the blades of grass you stand on. They want to chip the soil. They want to chip the trees. They want to chip your animals. They want to chip grandma. They want to chip you. I mean, pretty soon it's all going to be chips and interfacing with machines, transhumanism, singularity, and the AI will take over. And then we're pretty much sitting on our butts doing nothing and getting a free wage from the government.
Jeez. Now, don't we have an option? I mean, I already see these companies that, oh, yeah, these, you know, these employees, yeah, I want to be chipped, and they're willing to get their hand chipped, you know. But
sure.
What about us?
It doesn't, it's no different than getting a tattoo. It's no different than getting an ear pierced. It's no different than getting a nose piercing. And these young people have been doing it for some time now, and so it's not going to hurt them to get something about the size of a normal grain of rice injected into their skin that they can use to play better video games.
Yeah, I don't like that personally.
I've heard that people that have gotten surgery have unknowingly had been chipped, you know, during their surgery. I don't know if that's true or not, but it's frightening.
Well, I mean, there's always the possibility. I mean, I remember when Timothy McVeigh was involved in the Oklahoma City bombing, he said he had a chip in his butt. And the movie Manchurian Candidate, all the guys in that situation were chipped too, so...
Were they knowingly, or was it something like behind their back, you know?
Well, I don't know. I don't know if it was knowingly. I mean, they're basically hypnotized or under some MK Ultra control. So, you know, that's why they did it. That's what it was all about, is being brainwashed, you know.
Wow.
That's a fantastic movie. I love that movie with Denzel Washington. And if that's the way things are, the world truly is, or this country truly is a scary place.
I'm so old. I remember the Frank Sinatra version. So anyway,
I've never seen that one. I should watch that. Yeah, because there is that really old original one. But I mean, the country's definitely become a surveillance state. I mean, and this ties back to 9/11 and all the things that they passed since then. And nowadays, it seems like everything's watching us. You know, your phones, Facebook, and everything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's frightening.
Mm-hmm. True. Well, that's the whole thing, is people want transparency. Transparency isn't always good. I mean, there's got to be a backstage to everything. And I mean, if you're constantly, you know, changing and doing things behind closed doors and somebody sees it, it invades not only your privacy, but it also invades your cognitive liberty. And that's what I think is important, is that, you know, our brains need to be kept where they can't get at them. And it's hard sometimes when they put you through brain scans and they're able to measure, you know, electromagnetic energy from the brain, and they can toy with it. So it's just times are going to really change, and you're going to start seeing a lot of things happen where, you know, 21st century neural networks and algorithms and everything else are going to be reading your mind every time you turn around. So you'll go to the store and somebody will say, oh, are you interested in this? Are you interested in that? How'd you know? So that's how it works.
I notice on Facebook, you know, if I'm searching for whatever, you know, using Google, and then suddenly you start seeing all these ads popping up for what you were, you know, Googling. It's terrifying. The amount of information the government probably has stored, it's probably stored at that new facility. What was it, in Colorado or Utah or something, that new NSA?
It's in Bluffdale, Utah. Yeah, it's in Bluffdale, Utah. It's out there near. Google has an office out there. Microsoft has an office out there. You know how it goes. It's all these places have offices out there.
Yeah, and all these fusion centers, and it's only going to get worse. It's terrifying.
Right.
But I see we're actually kind of coming towards the top of the hour here. So I wanted to give you an opportunity to let everybody know, if they're not already listening to Ground Zero, you know, how they can tune into that and the times and stuff like that.
Well, on the internet, you can go to talkstreamlive.com and just click on the Clyde Lewis icon. It's usually there when we run our show between 7 p.m. Pacific time till midnight, because we're on Monday through Friday through the Premier Radio Networks. Talkstream Live basically are radio stations that stream the show, all listed together so you can listen. Then I've got soundcloud.com/groundzeromedia, which is our archives of some of our past shows. Go back and listen to those. You'll really like those. We also have books available. I have 3 books that I published. They're available at the Ground Zero Bookstore. GroundZeroBookstore.com is the place to go there. And we do something called Donate to the Art of Ground Zero. What it is we do artwork. We do montages, sounds. We do posters and all kinds of other cool artwork to advertise the show. And people have said, hey, you know, how would we be able to get a copy of those? And I said, well, we're going to have to figure it out. So in order to avoid, you know, massive lawsuits by companies we've done these strange, mosaics from, they said if it's done for art, then people can actually get them for a price. And so we basically asked a donation of $12.99, and you get the montages, you get posters, you get stickers, you get a bunch of stuff. All the artwork of Ground Zero available if you want to donate to our art. So there you go.
Awesome. Well, Clyde, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show tonight. It's been truly an honor, and I really thank you for taking the time for our little conversation. It's been awesome and great, and I'm hoping to see you out there at the Bigfoot conference and meet you.
Yeah, I should be out there, hoping to be out there, and then I'm off to the eclipse. So batten down the hatches. We're going to have a great weekend, I'll tell you.
We will. That's the same thing with me. We're going to go and do the Bigfoot, and then we're going to head towards the coast. So, yeah, that's what we're looking at.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Let's hope we don't get stuck in traffic.
I know, or an accident, or who knows. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, something like that. Anyway, yeah.
Cross your fingers, and we'll be safe.
Sure. Thank you both. Thank you so much.
Clyde,
all right.
Appreciate it.
All righty. Thanks, Clyde.
You got it. Bye-bye.
Okay, take care.
All right, Sherry.
Okay. Great guest. Next week, we're going to have a paranormal team. I was on their show today this afternoon. Our broadcasting the first time was on Thursday, and we had a little bit of a glitch. And I guess I don't know if it's, you know, computer or maybe paranormal, but apparently on the other side, if everything went wrong, it could have gone wrong. So, but we were able to go and play it out again and do another interview. And so it's going to be called Paranormal Night Stalker. There's a team. There's two guys. One's in North Carolina or South Carolina. I don't know. I don't remember. It's one of the Carolinas. And the other one is almost on the tip of Alaska. So they've been in the business for a long, long time and seen EVPs and ghosts and things like that. So both of them are going to share the limelight and going to be on our show next Sunday. So any questions or anything, feel free to call in. And it's Paranormal Night Stalker. Awesome guys, really nice. They look at their view is all scientific. So, you know, they don't look at it from a mediumship or psychic kind of view, but they look at it from a very, very scientific, and they're willing to share their experience and their knowledge with us and our listeners.
Well, it sounds like right up my neck of the woods, because you know how kind of, I mean, I'm not educated in science, but I dig the science, so.
It's amazing. It's awesome. So anyway, everybody have a good week. Be safe. Stay cool. And we want to thank you honestly from your bottoms of our heart to go for your support and just listening to us and all the many likes. We thank you, thank you, thank you.
Absolutely. And thanks again to Clyde Lewis and the show Ground Zero. And it's been truly an honor to have him on the show. He is one of the biggest people out there in radio that cover all these subjects, if not the biggest.
And he was among the top, I believe the top, don't quote me on it, maybe Clyde can tell us on the Bigfoot festival, he was listed as the top 50 or top 100 radio show host in the U.S.
Absolutely. Hey, maybe, who knows, maybe one day we can get there. Maybe we can break the top 100 someday.
Hey, maybe. You know, you just never know. Yeah, he's got a wonderful radio voice. A lot of knowledge and just wonderful. Okay, Jason.
All righty. Well, I want to thank everybody again for listening to the show tonight and all our listeners on Blog Talk Radio and 106.5 KITC FM and 107.1 KNCP in Central Oregon. And we will be back next Sunday, 8 p.m. West Coast time, and hope everybody has a fantastic, safe week. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Take care. Peace. Love you guys.